This podcast is brought to you by Learn Prime. Start your journey to becoming a great developer at learn.thoughtbot.com.
Recording on my end with this wonderful piece of software called Audacity.
Yeah.
I can't believe they had the audacity to release this piece of shit. See what I did there?
I got that, yeah.
Forewarning, I've had a lot of coffee today.
Yeah.
A lot. Hey everyone, this is Mark in San Francisco.
This is Gordon in Boston.
And this is Build Phase. What's on the agenda for today?
You want to talk about testing?
Yes.
Yes. So do you, what's your experience like testing? And when I'm saying testing, I mean like TDD style testing, full stack testing in iOS.
I've done some testing, but I still consider myself to be at a very beginner level when it comes to actual test-driven development and not just testing after the fact. Most of the testing that I've done has been testing something after the fact.
Right, to like prevent regressions and that
exactly.
Kind of stuff. Or like you find a bug, so you fix the bug and then write a test to make sure that the bug doesn't pop up again.
Or write the test to validate the bug's existence, Then fix the test.
Yeah. So that's close. I mean, that's getting closer to like true TDD style stuff, right? So aside from just like experience level, like just not doing it, what do you think are some of the, like what's keeping you from diving into TDD? Is it just you don't understand the practice, or you're just not used to the practice, or is it a tools thing?
With most of my recent projects, there just really hasn't been enough time to get into it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I need to be practicing this on the side so that it's not holding up my, you know, actual day job, working on client work, teaching myself how to do TDD, flailing about and wasting a bunch of time.
So that's it, though? It's just a...
Yeah, I get the basic principle, and I, you know, testing an interface and not testing an implementation.
Mm-hmm.
But I still only work at like a very basic level.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm super skilled with like mocking and stubbing, spies, etc.
Yeah, I don't consider myself like an expert by any means. I totally like drink the Kool-Aid on it, right? Like I get it, and I get why it's awesome, and I want to do it everywhere. But I still kind of suck at it. Like at like a super high level, I know I could improve my testing just like I could improve everything else, right? Like it's just a skill. So trying to get better at it. But I've been doing it like more and more, like hardcore TDD, always test first. I've lucked out in that my client that I've been on for a while now, their lead iOS guy wanted to do the same thing at the same time, right? So, like, we both kind of, you know, the client was there and the client wanted to do a lot of testing. And so I was able to kind of step into that and learn alongside the client, inside the client project, which helped a lot. And got to play with, like, a bunch of different frameworks and, you know, really kind of form some opinions after doing it for this long. On, especially on iOS, right? Because iOS isn't Rails, and Rails, I think we can still learn a lot from where Rails is now, especially like our coworkers, the Thoughtbot Rails devs, like where they are on testing is like light years beyond where I am. And so I think that we can learn a lot from what Rails is doing in terms of testing. But it's not like a one-to-one. It's always been a problem for me trying to translate what the Rails guys do to what's going to work on iOS, just because the frameworks are so vastly, vastly different.
How do they differ? I mean, how have you found that, like, what's available to you to test your code differs between what the Rails guys are using and what is available to us?
So, like, tools-wise?
Yeah, frameworks.
Yeah. I think that I think that the Rails tools for testing are much more mature than the iOS tools for testing. On Rails, you kind of have full disclosure, this is my completely super limited knowledge of Rails just by sitting in a room full of Rails devs. Like, this is my understanding of testing on Rails. So if this is wrong, you can email mark@thoughtbot.com with corrections. Like, on Rails, like, you kind of have the two camps boiling down to, like, RSpec or test unit as the two main frameworks. Like, that's at the unit testing level, and then for, like, acceptance integration test stuff, you have Capybara WebKit, I think, is what they use to, like, drive the UI versus, like, Cucumber, right? So, but all of those, all four of those things are, like, super mature. They've been around for a while. They've been under heavy, heavy, heavy use on big, big projects for a while. And we don't have that yet on iOS. And Apple has shown very, very little interest in supporting testing up till now. Like, they did when they announced OC Unit. I think they announced OC Unit. When they announced OC Unit, they announced it alongside Core Data. And it was like their big thing was like, Core Data is totally unit tested. And so here's this unit testing framework we have to go along with it. And that's literally the last time they talked about testing before this past WWDC, which I don't think we can talk too much about. But
that's not exactly true. I mean, UI automation.
UI automation, but UI automation isn't designed for a testing. Like, it's designed to drive the UI, but it's not designed to drive the UI to do acceptance testing. At least my understanding is that it is not.
And no, I don't think that's correct.
You think it is designed to do that?
Yeah, I've written integration tests that eventually boil down to UI automation. I was using Boken and CoffeeScript.
Right, but so Boken is using UI automation to do the integration testing thing. My understanding, and I haven't looked into UI automation itself a whole lot. The JavaScript kind of immediately kept me from wanting to look at it because I just have no interest in JavaScript, but I'm of the opinion that if Apple really cared about that kind of testing, they would have built, they would have just opened up UI automation to Objective-C. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't build their unit testing framework in JavaScript. They built their UI driving framework in JavaScript. And I think that's telling of how much they care about it.
Kind of. And it does seem like an odd choice. I'd love to know why they went with JavaScript. Like, at what meeting they settled and they're like, okay, we're going to open this thing up, but you have to write JavaScript to drive the UI.
Yeah, and you have to run it through instruments. Like, you don't run it through Xcode. You run it through instruments.
Right.
You know? It's more about, it's always seemed to me, and I know there's people that have used it to create things like Boken, and there's a book that just came out on pragmatic programmers. I'll look it up real quick. There's a book that came out from the pragmatic programmers by Jonathan Penn called Test iOS Apps with UI Automation. It's, you know, in the book he says learn how to script the user interface, assert correct behavior, stub external dependencies, reproduce performance problems, organize test code, and automate the whole process so the machine does the work. So the UI automation is definitely like a nice framework, but I think the fact that it's so hidden away, one, it's hidden away in instruments, and they haven't put, like, when was the last time do they do WWDC sessions on it? Like, I can't remember seeing a UI automation WWDC session on, like, properly using UI automation. So there's people out there that are using it to do some really cool stuff, and I'm not saying that that's not the case. I'm saying that OC Unit and, or, you know, the new thing, or UI automation, to me, are in two separate categories, right? My sense has always been that UI automation is more about performance stuff. So instead of me tapping this button 100 times and making sure I don't have a memory leak, I'll just script the UI to tap the button 100 times and make sure I don't have a memory leak.
That's interesting. I've never thought about UI automation that way.
Yeah.
I always just assumed that it was for integration testing. But yeah, if you're trying to reproduce the same case and check to see if the changes you're making to the code are actually increasing the performance,
right.
You know, using like heap shot analysis and stuff, right. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Right. And at that point, UI automation makes more sense as a framework as a whole, right? Like the whole way it's set up, the fact that you run it through instruments, the fact that it's written through JavaScript, all this stuff makes more sense if you think about it as less of a testing framework and more of an automate. I mean, it's the name, right? It's about automating the UI so that you can, you know, run the profiler and make sure that you're not, you know, missing a dealloc or a release statement somewhere. You know what I mean?
Right. I'm wondering if they settled on JavaScript because it was easier to output JavaScript via the capture tool.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah.
Easier than generating, say, Objective-C that does the same thing, maybe with private API, kind of like how KIF is built. KIF by Square, by the way.
Right.
I should clarify.
Yeah. We'll get to that. Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, you know. If that's the intended use case, to like click record and then do an action and then hit play and just do that action 100 times, then using JavaScript makes sense because you want to, yeah, like you said, it's easier for them to output that code. And they're not intending you to write it by hand. They're intending you to drive the user interface and then play it back. So I think that's interesting, but I don't think it gets us far enough at a testing, like at a integration / acceptance testing level, whatever you want to call it. UI level testing, you know. I think it gets us part of the way there, but I don't think that you can take a framework like Boken, right? Which we'll link to, but so Boken is a framework that you've used and I have not, but it's essentially a wrapper on top of UI automation's JavaScript interface, but it's all written in CoffeeScript. And so you actually write out your tests by hand in CoffeeScript, and then you can run them from the command line, right?
Correct. Yeah, we had a rake task that would fire it up, run it in the simulator.
And so it drives the UI, and then it also makes assertions based on the UI, right? So you would say, like, click over to this view, and then you should see these things on the screen.
Right. And the way it's written, I believe, kind of encourages you to use the page model,
right? Yeah.
Pattern.
Yep.
When it comes to driving the UI in that way.
Do you think we should explain what that is? Probably.
Yeah. Go. Yeah. Go for it.
Do you know? Am I explaining to you?
Roughly, but I don't want to explain it wrong.
Well, I'm not like an expert on it, but my understanding on the page model, which I'm fascinated by this pattern. I think it's great, especially from an acceptance testing, from the stance of an acceptance testing thing. I think it's a really, really nice abstraction. The idea is to have an object that represents the screen that is displayed. So it comes from Selenium, which is a web driver that runs through Firefox, I believe. And so that's why it's the page model object, because it comes from web development. But you'd have one object that just represents like a specific screen. So maybe the screen is 5 levels deep in a stack, but you just say like screen visit, right? You just have a method on it. And the page object model knows how to get to itself. And then once it can get to itself, you would say, like, inside the acceptance testing framework, you would say something like, if it's a page that's supposed to perform an action, you would say, page, perform this action. And then the page would know what buttons to click to complete that action. And then you would say, you'd make an assertion like, page should have, the new object on it. And then the page knows how to figure out that it has a new object and then return a Boolean based on it. That makes sense at all? I feel like
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. Okay. It's a weird abstract concept. Like, it's kind of funky, and I'm not an expert on it, right? Like,
I liked about that was that I could define kind of abstract pages as well for, like, common types of user interfaces that were in the app I was writing integration tests for. So it's very common that there'd be something in a navigation controller, and the left bar button item would be edit, and the right bar button item would be add, and then when you're in edit, it would be done. So we could just kind of specify at the high abstract level, tap the left button, tap the right button, and then the lower level models could override that and provide an interface that's more specific. Add a to-do, and then it would say, okay, well, I'm just going to tap my right bar button item.
Yeah, right, right.
So it allows you to keep things clean, refactor your tests, I think are as important as refactoring your code, avoiding duplication and the like.
One of the things I've been really strong on recently inside Code Reviews is, like, when I was first getting into testing stuff, I'd do code reviews and I kind of skim over the tests and I felt kind of crappy about it, but I just didn't have a real good grasp on what they were supposed to be doing, so I didn't know what I was checking for. And at this point, one of the things in I code review tests almost probably more stringently than I do production code, right? Like, I've said a couple times in code review comments, like, we wouldn't do this in production code, so why are we letting it slide in the testing code? Like, hacky code is hacky code, whether it's in the tests or it's in the production app. I think it's important to keep the code quality up.
Can you give an example of that? Are we talking about unit tests or integration tests?
Yeah, it was mostly unit tests because the integration tests tend to be kind of almost in their own language, because you're using, like, everything out there is using a different kind of, it's a different framework, and there are all these self-contained frameworks, right? Like, Bwoken is completely self-contained. You're writing in JavaScript. Or CoffeeScript rather, but you're not using the same patterns as you would maybe in your unit tests. And KIF is written in a very, very specific way with scenarios and steps and all this stuff. And everything just kind of has its, all the stuff at the acceptance testing level has its own language. But at the unit testing level, you know, yeah, doing, I can't think of anything specific. Big tests, I guess, just large, overly large tests, and it's like, well, or like doing a lot of object setup, and it's like, well, can't we pull this out into a category? Like, we wouldn't do this much object setup, a category or a new object, you know, like if you have to set up a fake instance of like a user, instead of just doing like user.name equals foo, user.address, like, instead of just setting all that up, like, I've been getting really into using categories that are only pulled into the test bundle that like do that kind of stuff for you. And that specifically is like one of those things, like, if you kept setting up the same object over and over and over again, you wouldn't just set it up everywhere. You know what I mean? You would build some kind of wrapper around it, a factory method, or maybe it's like a subclass or something. Like, you would do something there. Like, I don't know exactly what you do, but you wouldn't let that fly in production code. So,
right. Have you run into any instances where you can't do a normal refactor like you would in production code because of how the test framework expects things to work? Or
yeah, definitely.
So what are you using right now for unit testing?
On my client's project, we're using Kiwi, which is a super popular unit testing framework. It's basically our spec. So it's behavior driven. Instead of the difference there being that instead of just raw OC unit or GH unit or I guess those are really the two big ones, right? But so OC unit is the one built in by Apple. That's Apple's framework. It's designed to test methods, right? So like I call this method and I'm testing the return value or side effects on that method. But it's designed to test, like, the whole unit testing idea is about testing the smallest possible part of the code, piece of code that you can test. And most of the time that's at the method level, right? So like you have a test class that's testing like a model class, and then each test is testing a method in that model, right? So test that set foo sets foo kind of a thing. And then you say thing.foo equals blah, you know, and then test assert, what's the, it's like, I don't remember. But there's like an assert, there's an assert macro that then you call on a value to assert that a thing is set up the right way, right? So that's the kind of strict TDD approach. And then Kiwi is based off of RSpec, which is a behavior-driven development approach where you describe behavior about an object. So I'm not necessarily describing the method itself and the return value of the method itself, but I'm describing a behavior that an object should have. So you have, like, it's basically blocks inside of blocks inside of blocks inside of a macro. It's super weird. Like, when you actually dig into what it's doing, it's kind of crazy. It's building OC unit. It's built on top of OC unit. So it's building OC unit test cases at runtime and then, like, passing them back into the testing bundle. So it's kind of freaking, it's kind of hacky and kind of weird, but it gets the job done.
Do you think that's a good thing? I mean, is the only benefit just so you can run your tests inside of Xcode?
And write them in Objective-C, right?
Yeah.
And the other benefit is that, like, there, so the other frame, the, there's two other big frameworks, GHUnit, which is GitHub's, not GitHub, what am I saying? Google, it's from Google. It's there, they have a unit testing framework, and I think it does acceptance testing. I think it does UI testing as well, GHUnit does. And it's weird, it's got like a, they have their own like iOS app that ends up running and displaying the results in the iOS app and a whole bunch of other crazy stuff.
Yeah, I think GHUnit can do snapshotting.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it does screenshots, and then it shows if it's if the view changes and it's outside of a threshold that you've set for how different that screenshot can be, it says like, hey, this screen changed. Do you want to accept the new screen or reject it? And so, like, you reject it, then the test fails. If you accept it, then it saves the new screenshot, and you move along. And then the other one is Cedar from Pivotal Labs. And I actually don't know that much about Cedar. We had evaluated it a while back, but I think the thing that pushed us away from it is the same thing as GHUnit, which is that it has its own infrastructure that you need to run it in, right? Like, you can't run those, you can't run GHUnit or Cedar tests from inside Xcode. And beyond that, like, you can't use Xcode's own error handling that's built into its testing frameworks, right? Like, when I smash command U in a Kiwi test and I get a test failure, I also get, like, a, you know, failure warning or an error message in the sidebar, and I can click on that and it brings me right to the failed test. And I don't get that out of as far as I know, I don't get that out of Cedar or GHUnit. So, yeah, Kiwi is a way to write nicer looking tests, behavioral driven tests, but still be able to be in Objective-C, still be able to be inside the Xcode environment, which is really nice. And so that's what we've been using on the client project, and it does a lot of cool stuff too, right? It does mocks and stubs and spies are all built into Kiwi. So being able to set up a fake, like a null object representing something so that, you know, it doesn't do anything. Like, it's good for keychain stuff, right? Stub out the thing that's interacting with the keychain with a null object, and now you don't have to worry about stuff actually getting saved into the keychain when it's being run inside your tests, which is great because that can be a huge headache down the line. And so I really like Kiwi. Kiwi's been really, really good, really stable. But I've been looking at Specta and Xspecta, which is a matcher framework for it. And I really kind of like it. It's a much more modular approach. So where with Kiwi, all you need is Kiwi. Like, you can install it through CocoaPods, and that's all you need is Kiwi. Specta, in order to get Specta up and running, you probably need three different libraries. You need Specta, which is just the spec syntax, Xspecta, which is the expectation syntax, and then you probably want OC mock as well, which is a mocks and stubs framework, and it can do assertions based on mocks and stubs. So, like, if you say this object should get this message, when I do this other thing, you do that through OC Mock instead of through Specta. Whereas in Kiwi, it's all just one thing. But I kind of like the fact that it's modular, because it means that if a better matcher framework comes out, I can just use that better matcher framework. Or if a better mocking and stubbing framework comes out, I can just use that mocking and stubbing framework. Or if a better spec framework comes out, I can just use that. Right. So I've been getting more and more and more into libraries that do, right, single responsibility principle, but at a library level. Like, I really like that Specta, all it cares about is setting up tests that run on top of OCUnit. And I really like that Expecta, all Expecta worries about is defining matching an expectation syntax. And I really like that the only thing OC Mock cares about is mocks and stubs. Like, that's it. I think Specta does a really good job, especially in its failure messages. The first time I ran Specta and it failed, I was blown away, because it just gave me like this really nice description of all the failure messages on it. It's made to be run. It's designed so that it can be run from the command line with Facebook's XC tool, which is also awesome. And so it can be run from the command line with XC tool. And so you get like this kind of nice output of here's exactly what failed. So if you're not running it inside Xcode, you still have a nice overview of your failures.
Does Kiwi still report that your tests succeeded if the entire thing just fails to run?
That's an OCUnit thing. That's not Kiwi. But yeah, yes, first of all, yes. That's
so annoying.
That's Xcode. That's Xcode and that's OCUnit. I don't think that has anything to... I think every framework inside Xcode is going to suffer from that same problem. But yeah, if the build succeeds, but then, for example, the simulator is still in use, and so it can't run the tests, and so you say, okay, to the alert box and it kills the thing, then it automatically pops up and says test succeeded when they just hadn't run
right
at all.
Yeah, zero tests executed.
Right.
Tests succeeded.
Right.
So we've talked a little bit before about your client project and how you don't persist a lot of data, but you do network requests for everything because you don't save anything. So when it comes to testing those, what advice do you have? Like, what are you using? What do you like about it?
So we were using a stubbing library. So when testing that kind of stuff, we're testing that we're essentially just testing that the request objects that are actually like that what's being sent out from the request objects, just making sure that those are the right thing, right? So when I call When I send this request through AF networking, the thing that the server is getting should look exactly like this, right? It should have this JSON payload. It should have these headers, that kind of thing. And the way we're doing most of that is we just have these really kind of extensive, just JSON responses that are just saved inside as test fixtures. And we have a pretty intricate... So we're using
Nocilla?
Nocilla. We were using Nocilla. And we were running into problems because I think it matches almost too precisely with Nocilla. Like, if the keys were out of order, then the tests were failing, right? So we were getting a bunch of intermittent failures or just kind of some weird stuff. And so we actually switched to OHHTTP
stubs.
Yeah, OHHTTP stubs. Which you were using that on a client project and you had turned us onto that. And so I kind of relayed that to my client and we've been really happy with that. But so when testing like the stuff that's actually dealing with the server, we're testing that the request looks okay. And then from that point on, anything above that, we're just stubbing the responses. So we have a pretty intricate system for stubbing responses or stubbing requests to return a very specific JSON fixture that is just saved, you know, in the repo with all the tests. We haven't had too many problems with it. There was one thing where like we were testing fine on our end. You know what I mean? Like this still, it doesn't save you from all possible problems because since like, we're disconnecting ourselves from the server at this point. So if the server changes in any way, then our app isn't going to know that those changes happened, right? So if it starts returning, we're developing against a fake server at this point, right? The fake server is our test suite. So if the server decides it wants to return objects differently and we don't know, all of our tests are still going to pass because our tests are saying you should see this and you should get this and you should send this and that kind of stuff. But once we remove the tests, like, we had a problem where one endpoint for some reason needed admin authentication on the server side, and we didn't know for some reason. Like, I'm not sure exactly why we got put in this state, but all our tests were passing, and even our test account, like, we were using a test account to test against the server, but it actually had admin privileges on it. And so someone else that didn't have admin privileges tried clicking on some button and they hit that endpoint, and then it immediately locked them out. Like, it logged them out of the app and kicked them out, and it was like, what the hell? Like, all of our, you know, but there's almost no way for our tests to have caught that. Testing, you almost have to disconnect yourself from a server to a certain extent, which sucks.
Right. That just makes it more difficult. Like, when the server changes, that's a bunch of manual work then, right, to update your fixtures.
So, I mean, yeah, we could just update the fixtures by doing a curl to the endpoint and saving the response, you know? But yeah, there's a lot of JSON that's just hanging around. Just like thousands of lines of JSON that's hanging around inside these repos. But I don't know that there's a really good way around that. I think the most interesting place for testing, and the thing I'm kind of having fun watching, and I think that, and the place that I'm probably snarkiest about on Twitter is around like the UI testing, right? So, like, the UI automation stuff we were talking about before, and then there's some other frameworks out there to do this kind of stuff, Woken being one of them. There's KIF, which you mentioned earlier, which is from Square. There is Frank, which is from one of the guys over at ThoughtWorks, Pete Hodgson. He's a super nice guy.
What is Shelley?
Shelley is part of Frank. So
that's a weird sentence taking out of context.
So Shelley is, so the way Frank is cucumber testing in, it's basically a cucumber driver for, or a Selenium driver. I don't know how the terminology there works, but so Frank drives the UI and then it intends for you to use cucumber or RSpec on the Ruby side. So you're actually writing all your tests and everything in Ruby, and then Frank is driving the UI and then handing stuff back to you. And Frank is built out of a bunch of different little modular frameworks that are kind of fascinating. One is Shelley, which is a view selection engine. So it allows you to say, to look up views based on their accessibility labels by passing in like a specially formatted string. So I say button, you know, button label foo, and it'll just search through the view hierarchy to find a button that has that accessibility label. And that's like all Shelley does. That's what Shelley's good for. And then there's also a framework called Public Automation that can take view. It's a thin wrapper around UI accessibility's, no, sorry, UI automation's Objective-C framework that allows you to interact with UI automation through Objective-C. So there is actually an Objective-C library for UI automation, but Apple hasn't exposed it. So this just wraps that.
Oh, okay, I see.
And Frank uses those two to help drive stuff through. So it has like some translation stuff from Ruby to Objective-C, and Frank drives the UI with those two, but you write everything in Ruby.
Can you remind me what the problems were that you were having with Frank about a year ago?
I personally was having problems with it corrupting the app binary on the simulator, but I'm still not 100% sure if that was something I was doing wrong or something that was set up incorrectly or what. But the way Frank injects a web server into the app binary or into the app bundle. So it also has this thing called Symbiote. You're the biology guy. How do you say that?
I'm not a biology guy. I'm going to say Symbiote.
Okay, Symbiote.
It's like Venom from Spider-Man, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly like that.
Yeah.
So Symbiote. So he's got a thing called Symbiote, which basically allows you to do view introspection through a website. So Frank injects a web server into the app, and then you can go to a special URL on localhost, and you can see the view hierarchy and like click through it and that kind of stuff, which is kind of cool. But for me, there was something that was happening there where when I ran Frank on an app, it was corrupting the binary from Xcode, the non-Frank version. And so when Frank tried running, it was just like a black screen. And then I'd have to delete the app off the simulator and then run the Frank command, which would inject it properly and then put it on the simulator, and then it would run. But then if I wanted to run the version from Xcode, I'd have to go through the same process again because Xcode would try building it. The binary or something is still corrupted on the simulator, so I'd have to delete the Frank version and then run it. It was kind of a pain in the neck to deal with that. Again, that's probably not something that's happening everywhere because I can't imagine that not being a deal breaker for most people. And I know a bunch of people who use Frank. So yeah. But then the other thing was I just didn't want to write my tests in Ruby, you know, especially Cucumber. I didn't want to write them in Cucumber. Cucumber uses a lot of regular expression stuff. So yeah, you write your scenarios in plain text in a text document, and then that gets parsed with a regular expression engine through Cucumber, which dynamically calls Ruby methods that take a... So I say, like, in plain text, I'll say, given an admin user, right? So I just have that string of text. And Cucumber takes that line, and then it runs that... I have another file with all of the setup stuff, and they're Ruby methods that say, like, when, or I think it's even given, like the method name would be given, and then I pass in a regular expression that would match an admin user do, and then I pass a block. So that, does that make sense? You look confused.
Thanks for calling me out. I'm trying to sound smart. You just gave me away.
I'm explaining regular expressions over over a call. This isn't like low-level crap.
Let's get my grandma on the line.
Yeah. Okay, look, Nana, regular expressions.
Let's back up. What's a computer?
No, but so does that make sense? Like your methods in Cucumber, they have a regular expression, and when the regular expression matches the line, it does that thing inside the block for the method.
I think I get it. The whole point was to be able to write your tests in natural language,
yes,
right?
Yes. The idea behind Cucumber is that, like, you wouldn't even be the one writing the tests, right? The developer wouldn't be the one writing the tests. It'd be like the project manager or someone would be the one that writes out the specs of all the tests, of the specs for everything that needs to happen in the app, and then you would be able to implement those through Cucumber. I know a friend of mine works on an app using Frank, and they're doing some like diabetes stuff, so like testing blood sugar levels and stuff, and they have to conform to FDA regulations for all this stuff, right?
Oh yeah.
So they're just under an enormous amount of pressure to you know, they have to conform to all these regulations. So they're using Frank, and what they've actually done is their Cucumber scenarios are the spec that they pass to the FDA. So he said it takes them like 4 hours to run their acceptance testing suite through Frank. But
holy crap.
But then they print out this just book worth of cucumber specs, and then they hand that to the FDA, and here's everything that our app does exactly, you know? And so in that sense, it works really great, but that's not me. I'm not working on that app. It's a lot of overhead for me to want it. So that's one of the reasons that I didn't want to use Frank specifically. So we settled on Kiwi, and Kiwi is kind of nice. Or no, we didn't. What am I talking about? We settled on Kif, and Kif is kind of cool in that it's all Objective-C, and it has a interesting, it took me a little while to kind of figure out a pattern that I like to use with it, but it's like all categories. You're just building categories. You're writing categories on Kif test scenario or Kif test step. And there's like a lot of weird metaprogramming stuff going on where it's looking at all the methods declared on Kif test scenario and running them against a regex that says, does the method start with scenario to test something? And it's adding those to a list. And so like you don't have to tell it to run anything. It'll just run every scenario that starts with that string. And it works. I mean, it works really well. Like we have a pretty extensive, it takes a good 5-10 minutes to run our test suite, which I thought was extensive before my friend told me it took him like 4 hours to run theirs.
Well, that's pretty good for an integration test. I mean, it flies through it pretty quickly. Do you disable animations system-wide for your tests?
I did recently in order to fix some failures on iOS 7 because of a way that they changed animations between view controllers. I disabled animations because I was getting some weird view controller corruption stuff from another library that we're using. So the easiest way was just to disable animations app-wide. But Kif actually, it's not... Kif has delay built into it in order for it to be able to... It's expecting there to be animations, right? It's not expecting you to turn them off. So there is a certain amount of delay built into Kif. So turning off animations doesn't actually slow down the tests that much. It speeds up some of the assertions, but mostly like the click, like tap this button, tap this thing. It's like tap this button, and then there's probably a 0.4 second delay built into in Kif, built into just tapping that button, you know, because it's expecting to tap the button and then wait for the animation to finish and then do something. Yeah.
Any problems with Kif?
Intermittent failures, right? Like when I get a failure in Kif, I usually have to run it again because I'm not sure if it's Kif getting something just dead wrong or if it's actually like a legit failure. There's just tons and tons and tons of false positives.
That's the worst.
Yeah. Right, because the problem there is that if you don't trust your testing framework to test your app, then you're not going to use them. Right.
Exactly.
So that's kind of a problem. I'm not a huge fan of the structure. I've kind of forced the page model object pattern into Kif. So my scenarios in Kif are very short and make heavy use of step groups, well-named step groups. So my scenarios will be like, you know, I'll have the scenario description. So the way Kif test scenarios look is you have a scenario to test, you know, scenario to test that I can add a user. And then inside that, you'll create a scenario, give it a description, and then add steps to the scenario. The way we were doing it before was each one of those steps was like step to tap button with accessibility label, add, step to, right? Like creating them in the scenario. So the scenarios would be, you know, I don't know, 20, 30 lines long, and they'd be, everything was spelled out in the scenario. Kind of hard to read. Ended up having comments in there describing like this block of steps does this, this block of steps does that, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Really ugly. I was not happy with it. So I started moving everything into categories on Kif test step, where like every view at that point or every view controller has its own set of steps, and they're well named. So it'll be, you know, scenario, add steps from array, kif test step, steps to add user, right? That's like the whole thing. And then inside that add user, it may have a dozen steps. Like, I don't know. It may be one, it may be a dozen, but I always use this, you know, groups of steps, and they're always, I try to always name them as descriptive as possible, which is kind of that page object model thing, right? Just like, just give me one more level of abstraction and it just cleans stuff up a lot.
Yeah.
You had asked before about running into problems with testing, like not being able to refactor stuff that the way I would in normal code because of the frameworks. And this is probably one of those places where I have, right? Like I've had to do hackier stuff in KIF because I don't have access to the actual view hierarchy. So like scrolling to the top of a view, for example, seems like it should be a simple thing. And I've had to hack it in like half a dozen ways. And I keep like redoing it, you know, trying to get it to tap the status bar at the top of the screen, and that wasn't really working very well. And so then it's like forcing a swipe to happen on in the downward direction on a cell that may or may not be on screen. You know what I mean? Just kind of like really hacky kind of stuff to get that kind of a thing happening, which it seems like should be an easy thing.
I'm surprised that nobody has tried to add that to KIF. Like, given this scroll view, like, let's animate its content offset back to, you know, like, CG.0.
Right. Right. But you don't have access to the scroll view, right? So, like, that's one of the problems. You have to, it should be in KIF, right? Scroll to the top or scroll to the bottom.
That's what I meant. Yeah. I meant I'm surprised that nobody has tried to patch KIF to support this. Or is it that people have tried to patch KIF and just
sits there?
It's taking forever to get things pulled in.
Yeah. That's totally possible. I'm not super confident with the ways. I'm not super confident that Square is using KIF at this point. And I'm not sure how important the project is to them. In fact, last week, 2 weeks ago, it's not under the Square name anymore, actually. So I don't even know if it is a Square project at this point.
You mean on GitHub? Yeah, it's no longer GitHub, part of the Square organization.
Right. It's under its own KIF-framework organization. So it was started by Square. I don't know who started it at Square. Somebody started at Square. I heard it was someone that ended up leaving, or that it was like an intern or something that was there and then moved on or got promoted to full time, so they didn't have time to work on it anymore or something. But there was definitely like a lot of development on it first, and then something happened and it just kind of has been stagnant for a while. Every now and then they'll kind of come in and merge a few pull requests that are getting a lot of attention. There was like, it was flat out broken on iOS 7 for the past, I don't know, when was iOS 7 released? I mean, since beta 1, right? So we're in beta 5,
beta 6,
whatever. So we're in beta 6 now. And since beta 1, it has been broken up until 2 weeks ago, I think. Finally merged. And it was an easy fix. Like, the guy came in and he submitted this. There was a pull request sitting there for 3 months, two, 3 months, just sitting there without a word that fixed the problem, right? And not only did it fix the problem, it actually added a test suite to KIF, which apparently didn't exist before.
That's pretty meta.
Yeah. But he added a test suite to KIF. Like, it was an app that tested all the steps would work properly and that everything inside KIF would work properly. Added all this stuff, submitted a pull request, and then it sat there for 2 months. And it's just kind of like, dude, like this, it literally doesn't build on iOS 7 because they were looking for an instance variable that doesn't exist on iOS 7. Or at least if it exists, they changed the name of it. I'm not sure which, but, you know, like it wouldn't even compile and it was just sitting there for months. And they finally did merge it in, but that's kind of their pattern, right? Is to kind of hang around. Stuff sits around for months without any word, and then they just come in and they'll merge a couple things. So I don't think that there's any pull requests open for doing stuff like that, like scrolling to the top, but I suppose there could be.
I guess it's hard because KIF is built on top of private API, right?
It's not even. It's synthesizing everything. As far as I know, it's not even built on top of UI automation. So
No, not UI automation. I mean, it's using private methods within UIKit.
It's completely synthesizing touch events and faking the whole thing. Frank is actually built on top of UI automation, like I said. It's built on top of it in a hacky, not a hacky way, but they have to wrap UI automation with public automation in order to get to it, but it's at least built on a solid Apple-supplied framework. Even if it's a private framework, it's at least worked on by Apple.
And we know that going forward, there's going to be backward compatibility. I mean, there's like an entire team at Apple that's all about binary compatibility and making sure that things don't break wildly. But I mean, that's just what you get when you use private API. So we've kind of landed KIF for integration testing and Kiwi for unit testing is kind of what we're recommending at the moment.
Like today, yeah, but I'm not honestly super happy with the KIF thing. I don't have a better recommendation other than looking into Frank or Woken. There's another one, and I'm blanking on. There's a bunch of these things, right? I mean, there's just a ton of them. Frank and Woken are the two that stand out to me. There's another one that came out super recently, and I looked at it, and I can't remember what it was called, but I looked at it, and I felt like it was making a lot of the same mistakes that KIF was making, which made me reluctant to... Not in terms of management, just in terms of structure. Like I said earlier, I'm really not that interested in monolithic frameworks that do everything for me. Like KIF does, like I said, it synthesizes its own touches, it has its own view selection engine, and it does assertions, and it has a test runner. And that's a lot, you know. And the problem there is that, like, if my client wants to move off KIF at this point, they're kind of screwed. They kind of have to rewrite everything in order to change this one thing. And that's not awesome. But so unless something changes in the way KIF or Square or whoever is in charge of Square, whoever's maintaining KIF at this point, be it Square or whoever, unless something changes in the way that they're maintaining it, I just don't trust it to work for the long run. You know what I mean? Like, we actually forked KIF into a private repository, and I just applied the changes that I needed in order to fix it.
Right. And that's, do what you got to do.
And that's totally a Band-Aid move, right? That's just not – that's like – okay, let's get it up and running on iOS 7 so that we can reevaluate this, and maybe we should find a new framework to look at.
Yeah. Maybe this is just the state of integration testing until Apple makes a move on their end and it like opens up that Objective-C API for driving the UI.
Right. That would be it for me, right? Like if they even if they just opened up public automation UI automation, and then they have some kind of view selection engine, then we could build frameworks on that, right? Like that would be a totally solid base for us to build another framework that wraps up the common interactions into something nice that works inside. So my dream, honestly, is to be able to run my integration, acceptance, my UI level tests, I want to run them from the exact same framework that I'm running my unit test from, right? I want to run them from Kiwi or Specta or OCUnit or whatever. I don't care what that is. Whatever I decide And that's what they do on the Rails side, right? That's, again, like, the whole idea of, like, the Rails guys being, their frameworks are more mature than ours, and they're at a place where they have very solid tools under them. What they're doing is they're running their integration tests and their UI level testing. They're running it from our spec. And if we could get there, that would be killer. You know, that would be amazing.
So they're using our spec to make all the assertions. Unit test, integration test, doesn't matter. The actual assertions are being made by one framework, and that's what you want.
Exactly. That's what I want. I don't want a framework that does the driving and the, you know, the UI interactions and the view lookups and the assertions and the driving of the tests. I want a framework that drives the UI and maybe does some view lookups, and then I want to make assertions based on that through the page object model pattern, but I want to make those assertions with Kiwi. I want to make those assertions with Specta. I want to make those with the same thing. I don't want to have to switch contexts. You know what I mean? And I don't want to have to switch contexts. I don't want to have to mentally say, I'm writing an integration test now, so I'm going to write it like this, or I'm writing a unit test now, so I'm going to write it like this. I just want to write tests.
Yeah. Sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah.
Gordon, I think you might have some opinions on testing.
One or two. So show notes for this episode will be able to be found at learn.thoughtbot.com/buildphase/4.
You can also contact us by emailing us at buildphase@thoughtbot.com. We're also available on Twitter and app.net, just at ThoughtBot.
This episode was produced by Chad Pytel and recorded and edited by Mike Manner.